Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Wednesday. That part I am sure of. I'm less convinced it is actually the second day of September, but that's what I hear. So, I'm just here to report. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad you are with me. And filling out the dream team on the show today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Evening.
And Charlotte, I'd like to start with you and an article. You wrote up a piece from Renee Ritchie. Hi, Renee. About Apple Silicon and the Mac Mini.
Yeah, he picked up on something really interesting, which was that he feels that an Apple Silicon Mac Mini will mean better Mac Minis, more regularly updated Mac Minis. The Mac Mini has always felt like a bit of an afterthought, especially to people like me who have one and love it. And, I think it's nearly my 1-year anniversary with my Mini. Well, that's nice.
Oh, might
it?
Be, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Anyway, it's a lovely machine. I bought the 2018 one at the end of 2019. Oh, so yeah, I've probably done more than that. Which was at that point the top end Mini. They've since given it a bit of a tweak and an update. Mm-hmm. As one John Martellaro predicted, it's gone out. It's part of the developer kit now.
Yes.
So obviously they see, which is John predicted that on this show, I believe.
I wonder if you can fry an egg on the DTK version.
I mean, I can fry an egg on this version. I can tell you that for nothing. Come over, I'll make you breakfast on my Mac Mini with pleasure. I'll just watch Netflix on it for 20 minutes before you get here.
Oh, see, there you go. Yeah.
But, it's an interesting one. I think I've always said, and I've discussed it and written about it, and I've always thought the Mac Mini is a kind of undervalued and underused device. I think it's a really great device for lots of, that a lot more people should know about and would find value in.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a desktop machine, and I think there's still... like you, Charlotte, I really like the Mini. However, I do not have one. I don't have a current one. I do have an older one, and I love it. But I think there's still a really valid place in Apple's product lineup for a desktop machine like this that performs the function that it performed when Steve Jobs pitched it when it made its debut. And that was, you have a PC at home, and to that PC, you have your keyboard and your mouse and your monitor, and you have all that stuff attached already. And we can make it so that you can have a Mac, but keep all that stuff already. You just swap out that ugly beige tower or that ugly black tower, which is what most of them are now, with this sleek little slab of aluminum and move on with your day. And everything you've got, everything else you've got still works. You know, and it's great.
Which that was the Windows XP days when it was terrible to survive the Windows experience. And you could actually think about being a switcher in your life. But Windows 7, a little bit, and mostly Windows 10, has made living with Windows a practical experience. And so there's not so much motivation to switch anymore.
I disagree.
I'm a Mac, and Windows 10 was my idea. we were discussing this off air because I know this is what interests you. And in Renee's piece, he says, whatever the next generation equivalent of the AX series for iPads is, put it in the Mac version of that. So he talks about a 14X, a 15X, 16, and so on. So I think we can look forward to like a higher end version of the Mini, as he points out. The version of what's called a Mini that's going out to developers is a little bit. It's in a mini case, but it's not a proper updated Mac Mini.
The best I can gather, it's sort of we took iPad innards and put them in a mini case and sent you that. That seems to be sort of the 50,000 foot view of what's happening with the developer kit, just so that there's a computer you can use. So yeah.
Look, I use the Mac Mini for video editing, for recording this show, for writing every day, for editing photographs, all that kind of thing, for all the social media.
Yeah.
stuff, like lots of different things, and it performs very well. I plug it into my TV to watch Apple TV Plus on it, which I think is another thing. I think you might see, you know, you could turn the Mac Mini into a kind of an Apple TV like device. I don't know.
Yeah, the HTBC, the home theater PC, I think that's called. There's a lot of utility
that
for that
kind of vibe.
Yeah. How do I know? Sure. That's what my old Mini does. My old Mini is the Plex server at my house. So, yeah.
Charlotte. So, I would like to see Apple update the Mac Mini more often because they got into a bad state when on a few years ago with lack of updates. And it would be glorious if Apple updated the Mac Mini every year when they came out with a new A series chip for the iPads and the phone. But I would like to see Apple expand on the Mac Mini a little bit to a big brother machine now that they've got control of the architecture.
The Mini Pro?
Yeah. This is a Mini Pro.
Oh,
yeah.
Why do you always do this?
Do what?
Because it's me.
The joy of the Mac Mini, to my mind.
Yes.
So Apple made the iMac, very, very expensive. It made the it seems to have forgotten. Has it forgotten the iMac Pro? There's the Mac Pro.
It exists. We just don't talk about it because it hasn't been updated.
Okay, fine. Yeah. The Mac Pro is obviously crazy money and has very specific use cases, you know, film editors, music studios, that kind of thing. No one's going to really buy that for their home. Apart from a couple of colleagues here who get tempted every once in a while and will remain nameless. But the joy of the Mac Mini is it gets you into the Apple desktop space with most of the power most users could need at a non-pro price. For me, the decision was slight to buy a Mac Mini, not an iMac, was slightly affected by timing. I had a choice between a 2018 iMac at the start of 2019 or a 2017 iMac, or a 2018 Mac Mini. So obviously I bought the more recent device, the most up-to-date device.
Insert Brian saying about paying current money for... Go ahead, John.
Was being able to select your own display a part of the issue? And what size is your screen?
So I bought, I think it's about a 27-inch 4K display, and it does nicely. Homeworking is, I'm kind of, Kelly shared with the team a clip of Terry Pratchett, the author, surrounded by about six displays at one point. And he says, the reason I have six is because the other two aren't working.
Oh, no, his was, I don't have room for eight. And the reason John Keat has six displays is because two of them are broken.
Right.
Hi, John. So I know he gets left out if we talk about monitors for more than 5 seconds and don't mention him. So hi, John.
So display was not the issue. You could have gone with an iMac. So what drove you towards the Mini if it wasn't the screen?
As I said at the time, it was the right device for me at the right price point. It was the, I wanted a new 4K display anyway. I couldn't bring myself to spend the amount of money required of an old iMac.
And that's where Brian comes in with his, I don't want to pay current money for old tech. So, yeah.
Correct. And at the moment, I've feel no compulsion to upgrade it 2 years, you know, getting to 2 years on or whatever, because there's been no significant upgrades. Right. Was there an Apple Silicon Mac Mini in, you know, a year, 18 months? Then suddenly I have a decision to make. And I suspect that is the way Apple will go. And I think it will be very good, as I say, for a very undervalued product, which I think probably a lot more people could integrate. There are probably a lot of people who have an iMac or even a MacBook Pro that would have a very nice home setup with a Mac Mini, and it would do exactly what they want, and they maybe even have some more flexibility in their setup.
Absolutely.
Because I always like to brag how many more ports my device has compared to...
For sure. John, I just want to go back. You said earlier, you know, that like the Mini made its debut in the Windows XP days, and that, you know, that was it was pretty compelling. Well, but it was pretty compelling to switch. to Mac OS at that point because Windows was terrible. But I think the reason I think that there's still a giant upgrade opportunity and that that function still exists as a thing the Mini could serve is not because Windows is terrible and I wish to forsake it. It's I have an iPhone and I have an iPad and I really like that Apple stuff and AirDrop doesn't work on a Windows machine and I can't send text messages and iMessages on my Windows machine and all these other small things that I like to do with my iPhone and my iPad, I can't do them with my computer. And it's time to upgrade anyway, so why don't I just go to the one that is similar to the computers I already use, the one in my pocket and the one in my bag, and get the computer that, and you know, make it a matched set. So I think it's more desire, and I think I know this because a lot of people have.
Most people feel that way. I'm just an oddball case.
Says the man with a Mac Pro.
Says the man with a Mac Pro who wishes the Mac Mini option were a little more robust. Yes.
So is that why you're pulling for the Mini Pro? Is because
because I can't afford a Mac Pro and I don't want to buy an iMac Pro and I'm going to have my own display, so I need a headless Mac and the Mac Mini just is a little too weak for me.
I don't know. I think in real power. I think on paper it seems like it, John, but I think in real life you'd be very happy with it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there are very few options. There are very few moments where I feel like I haven't got enough power.
Yeah. And Charlotte's editing a lot of video. So
I imagine that I'm in for like using higher powered stuff more often than many people who would do it. I just think, and I think the point, just go back to the original piece by Renee and our discussion. I think his point is Apple Silicon would allow the Mac Mini to be as part of a regular update and rotation, like as opposed to just this kind of, I think he describes it as a Schrodinger's device for a bit.
And I think
he has a point. And I think if Apple used Apple Silicon as a way to bring the Mac Mini into regular rotation, into a thing that more normal, in inverted, normal people, not us, were used to and aware of.
Yeah, I think so.
I think that would be to the benefit of both those users and the company.
Well, you'd have to understand which Macs were the most popular and make a decision about which Macs needed to be updated most often. And I think in the past, Apple made the decision that the Mac Mini didn't have to be updated that often, independent of the processor. But the MacBooks, MacBook Airs, and Pros did need to be updated because those are the best-selling machines. So my question to Renee is, what do you think has changed in the popularity of the Mac Mini with respect to MacBooks that would warrant an annual update?
I'm not sure he suggests anything has changed in terms of that. I think my argument is that you would make it a more popular device if you updated it, if you invested in it a bit more and updated it more regularly.
If it were updated regularly.
I don't know about that. My experience is people go into the store and they want to buy a Mac Mini and they say, oh, here, that's cool, I'll buy that. And they don't even know what model it is and they don't know what year it was published. We had a lot of discussions about that during the dark years of the Mac Mini.
Yeah.
From 2014 to 2018. And I was talking to people in Apple stores and quizzing them when I visited and said, you know, if you needed a Mac Mini, would you buy one? And they said, sure. And most customers are not particularly aware of the processor or the year the machine came out. They just buy it because out on display on the shelves.
And I'm not necessarily pushing for annual updates, but definitely regular updates. Like, it happens every 2 years or whatever. I think that would be great. And if it just was paying a little bit more attention to the Mini, because I think, like Charlotte, I believe it to be unjustly maligned, to turn a phrase from a friend of mine. But with that, we need to move on to, we have a few minutes left where we can talk about this really interesting data set that Charlotte uncovered about streaming subscriptions.
Yeah, and John and I, as you say, we're slightly running out of time, but John and I have a quite in-depth discussion on it, as you might imagine, in an upcoming edition of Background Mode, which we will get published and you can listen to, and that and we go into this. But it was some data from Adweek published originally, kind of that broke down the kind of bundles that people had bought for themselves, basically. It came from a service real good that lets you combine various subscription services into one piece of software. And the things that jumped out to, well, the thing that jumped out to me, and I know some different things jumped out to John, was that 91% of Apple TV Plus subscribers also have Netflix and Amazon Prime Video. So clearly at the moment, TV Plus is the kind of plus one, probably because they're not paying for it. Like, if you, the way the data breaks out, that for most people, Netflix and Prime Video are really the core. Disney Plus is hugely popular as well. No surprise there. But yeah, and it seems like people are picking those two and a plus one. Although if you kind of look, look at the data, HBO Max, a lot of people have HBO Max, also have Netflix and Prime Video. So those are the big ones that people kind of integrate and then add. As we'd speculated that that's what people were doing on this show before, and this data kind of from real good customers indicated it probably that is looks to be the case.
What stood out for me, Kelly and Charlotte, is what happens when you're a Netflix or a Prime subscriber already. Peacock did not make much of an impact on you.
The paid version. People like that. The paid version did not.
Disney was 50% and 61% respectively, but Peacock was 3% and 4% respectively for Netflix and Prime Video. So if you, the thing that stood out for me is that if you've got the big ones and the important ones, new guys have a tough sledding.
Particularly if you're asking for money. I think TV Plus is probably getting a free ride because people, a load of people bought iPhone 11s and iPhone SEs and got it for free. And so it's worth a punt. Are you going to spend, or then are you going to just spend that your money on that? Are you going to spend it on HBO Max, on the premium version of Peacock? Or are you going to put up with the ad version of Peacock because that's free?
This is a fascinating chart. It's from August 27th at the Mac Observer. A quarter of Netflix subscribers also have Apple TV Plus. And there's this glorious chart from Real Good is what we're talking about. And it bears inspection and amusement and analysis.
It's really interesting to see the breakdown of... So what John's referring to is the fact that if you have Netflix, 23% of Real Good customers also subscribe to TV Plus.
Okay, interesting.
And if you have Prime Video, that number is 31%.
All right.
Interesting. Interesting, Charlie. Did you notice on the top and the legends on the top vertically and horizontally, it says Apple TV? It doesn't say Apple TV Plus.
No comment.
I
don't
thought you'd
start
love
me.
That.
We're coming to the end of the show. Don't worry me.
So yeah, I think there's definitely a lot to it. Like, we could have spent the whole show just on this chart and listening to the two of you discuss it. I was interested to see the number of services that people were subscribed to. I think you know, we talk a lot about subscription fatigue in various ways, and so seeing that lots of people were subscribing to a fair number of services to me seemed like a very interesting data set to get. And I know whenever you can give John a data set that tickles his fancy, like, we're off to the races. So I'm definitely I definitely want to know if any more conversation comes out of this with John.
Yeah, well, you can hear us dive into it in a lot more detail over on John's latest episode of Background Mode, which will be up.
Spoiler alert, that's what the next episode of Background Mode is going to be. So that's going to have to do it for us. But I do want to point out again, Charlotte is on Background Mode next week, and you can hear them dig into this chart in much more detail. I also was interested in, you know, if you have this, then a lot of people who are subscribed to that service also have this other one, which was very interesting. And I kind of wanted to, when I was reading through it, I sort of wanted to line that up with shows. So, that's because people who like Stranger Things are also watching you know, something else, you know, are watching The Mandalorian. So, of course, it makes sense that you would have Amazon Prime and Disney Plus or whatever. So I was just sort of looking at some of that stuff and interested in it. So anyway, that's going to do it for us today. I'd like to thank you both for being here. Charlotte, as always, it's been a pleasure.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm off to cook some eggs on my Mac Mini.
And John Fourports Martellaro, thanks so much for coming by.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
As always, I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.